For BBS Radio, this is Lexi Ross with Health Frontier. Tonight we have a very interesting and actually challenging topic because the subject of vegetarianism has grown to be quite controversial. And our guest tonight is Harinama Mink, who has been studying the Vedas for about 20 or 30 years, and she has taught cooking at Kent State University and Oberlin College. And among the people that I know, I would say that Harinama Mink is probably one of the most well-informed about the physical, emotional, and spiritual aspects of being a vegetarian. Welcome, Harinam.
Thank you.
Well, we need to, I mean, the listening audience, I'm sure, has a lot of confusion because we have doctors who tell us to eat by our blood type, and that there's certain people, like, for instance, type B and type O, who are supposed to eat meat. And I know that the vegetarians feel that that's kind of an accurate analysis of what we should be doing with our bodies. So I thought maybe we could start off with that topic.
Ooh, that's a very controversial place to start off, because there are some people who became vegetarian and read that book and chose differently. Dr. Gabriel Cousins has a number of books out, and he has done research on that particular topic, and his background is a medical doctor and also in Ayurveda. And so there are traditions going back so many thousands of years in Africa, in India, that are vegetarian-based, and people were healthy for thousands and thousands of years, and everybody had the same blood type as they do now. There aren't new blood types that have been created. So the difficulty comes when you have a philosophy that says that all of us come, initially we're hunters, gatherers, we're all meat-based. But if you go into other ancient traditions, they don't say that. So it gets a little complicated when you start to discuss that topic and the roots of it. I think more importantly is just to deal with what is right now on the planet. And we're destroying the planet. We're destroying rainforests. We're destroying our bodies. And really, these days, we have the government coming out with all kinds of evidence. We have government agencies, dietary guidelines advisory committee, and they are saying that you are better off eating less meat, and many people are aware of that now. There's a lot of terrific websites for people who want to make some different choices, and people are beginning to educate themselves and realizing that the numbers are really against a heavily meat-based diet. The countries that have a high incidence of red meat eating also have the highest amount of hypertension. We have over 63 million Americans with high blood pressure. And then when they study people who are vegetarians, they find that the number drops to half if people aren't eating meat. And it's costing this country over $12 billion a year. So heart disease costs our country over $40 billion a year. And if somebody is not eating a lot of meat, you know, the incidence of heart disease drops to a half or three quarters the risk. Cancer, I mean, it keeps going on and on. These lists of diseases that are costing our country billions of dollars in health care a year, what to speak of the suffering. And then if we want to go into the suffering of the animals, hundreds of millions of animals are being slaughtered. And most people have never been to a slaughterhouse, but it's really a horrible thing to see. Most of us are so separated from what really goes on, but the torture and the suffering of these animals is such that I know people who, I mean, we are creatures of habit, so many times we have opted for these diets just because we grew up with them. They're comfortable, they're part of our traditions for Christmas and at different times, but really, they're not helping our country. They're not helping our own bodies. They're not helping so many things. And the animals suffer so horribly that there are people who I've shown videos to, and they've never eaten meat again. So we have a terrible situation with world hunger. We have, you know, a billion people suffering from chronic hunger. And yet a third of the grain that's grown is fed to cattle. So what you get from feeding all of that grain to the cattle is you get so much, it's so much less efficient that you begin to wonder what's really behind the propaganda to keep people eating meat. If it's hurting the planet, if it's hurting animals, if it's keeping us as a world, people in such terrible poverty, then why are we continuing to do this? In Africa, nearly 1 in 3 people are undernourished. So many people are going to bed hungry. And, you know, malnutrition affects 40% of children in developing nations, 60% of childhood deaths. So we have to really stop and think. There's so much information out there now, and we really need to take responsibility for our health.
Well, one of the factors that came up for me, I guess, in the Middle 80s, was when I was doing research on alternative cures for cancer. And I heard about a Dr. Gerson in Germany who happened to be curing, he was the only doctor in the whole world that was curing tuberculosis. And Albert Schweitzer brought his wife to Dr. Gerson. And, of course, he was curing her with a vegetarian diet. And he was the only doctor at that point that had actually tested how different foods react in the body. And mm-hmm. that's how he arrived at the vegetarian diet being the most health-producing. And then he later came to America and testified before the United States Congress that if even we would take, you know, not only meat away from the diet, but canned and processed foods, that we would eradicate 80% of the disease in America. And he, you know, later opened a clinic, and he continues to heal cancer all the time with, you know, organic vegetarian food, organically grown. But would you like to describe to the audience some of the ways that the livestock is treated? Because, you know, it's not pleasant to talk about, but I think that that's a reality check for people who, you know, have any doubt in their mind. Maybe you'd like to go over that for the audience.
Yeah, it's difficult to discuss these things because it's quite horrific. One of the problems that we're having now has to do with antibiotics because they've been so overprescribed. But in addition to prescribing them too much by the medical field for anything that they can't quite figure out, they're giving them in enormous amounts because of the unnatural living conditions of the animals who are bred for slaughter. They're getting huge amounts of antibiotics to just try to keep them alive long enough to kill them. Isn't that a strange concept? And so their bodies are flooded with all kinds of chemicals, antibiotics, and they're not cared for. Many of them are not cared for very well. You can see that they have been branded.
Well, they're contained in a cubicle that suffocates them,
well,
and they're defecating
them. Well, that's the calves.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about cows, and I don't think most people have even thought of this, but cows are very, very sensitive, very, very aware, very gentle creatures. And the mother literally will cry. She will stand in the pasture and weep for her calf when it's taken away after birth. And then these calves, so that their flesh is very tender for those people who happen to like veal, and maybe not everybody out there really knows that baby calves, that's what veal is, that's what you're referring to, they're not allowed light, they're not allowed to stand, they're not allowed to develop any muscle, they're deprived of everything. I don't know if anybody's seen a baby calf, but they're very beautiful creatures, very gentle. I mean, basically, these are animals that take what we can't eat, the grass, and what do they give us in return? They give us milk. And what do we do with milk? Yogurt, cheese, ice cream. How much a part of our life are these wonderful gifts of nature? And all they ask is that we treat them with some love and compassion, and they're just willing to give. The strange thing is that we've mutated genetically so many different species of cows that were never the way that, you know, people are used to seeing some of these very heavy, very dull-looking creatures, but we've created those. It isn't that those started out like that. If you see some of the very beautiful, more pure species of cows before they've been changed, I don't know anybody that hasn't taken a drive in the country and seen cows in the field, these lovely brown Swiss or the black and white, and it's very peaceful for the mind. It's actually in the Vedas that you see this. It's very peaceful. And milk products, they actually can help create higher brain tissue. The sages in the forest would live, they would go to the house of those who were in the villages, and they would stay long enough to just get a little bit of milk, and they would survive that way. So it's an incredible food, not the way that, I mean, many people have milk allergies now, but they don't really stop to think why those allergies are there, because milk is a very natural food. The way people are taking milk products, the pasteurization, the homogenization, how much is done to it, what's done to the cows themselves, is terrible. What to speak of the fact that these animals are trusting. You know, most people don't think. If I look at my dog and I say my dog is my pet, and I look at this beautiful creature, the cow, and I say, this is my dinner. How does one make that, you know, transfer? These are all living, breathing, feeling, living beings. So they actually trust us. You know, they trust, you know, like an animal will trust. If you feed an animal, you gain its trust. What a horrific thing at the end of the life of this creature that all of a sudden they're herded into these carts, some of their legs are broken, they're fearful, they're thrown down these chutes, they're stunned between the eyes, they fall on the floor of the slaughterhouse, they're hoisted up, they're terrified, their legs are hoisted up, they're in pain, they vomit into this pit below, their throats are cut, the blood is just pouring out, people are being listening to gospel music and, you know, hosing each other off from all the blood everywhere, and it's not a job that people laughed at. What a horrible thing to do to these creatures. And so we're getting the fear toxins. Not only are we getting all the chemicals that have been pumped through their bodies, through their life, just to keep them alive in these unnatural conditions.
Yeah, I want to mention the female hormones and the estrogens that are put into every, you know, cows, lamb, chicken, pork, everything, which we are ingesting in our bodies and are leading to cancer.
Yeah, so we have women with fibroids and we have men with larger breasts, which they don't even realize that many times that they did studies in areas and found that this was going on. So there's all kinds of havoc being wreaked on the planet, in our bodies, just the general atmosphere of slaughter. What a horrible thing. So many
I can't even imagine working in a slaughterhouse, what that must be like. You know, the mindset of the people, I mean, they have to, they would have to drug themselves to some degree, either with alcohol or something, to have to sit and watch animals being slaughtered like that every day.
And screaming in pain.
Yeah.
And throwing up.
Yeah.
And their eyes filled with terror. It's very, very pitiful. And the way that McDonald's is such a huge conglomerate is targeting children. Many children, they have a natural affinity to animals, and they tend not to be so attracted. Growing up in the 60s, I had friends, even in the 50s, they were saying, they told me that they would say to their parents, you know, I don't want to eat meat. I don't have an attraction to eating meat. And parents would say, no, if you don't eat meat, you'll die. But
right.
The fact that, you know, McDonald's has created these playgrounds and clown suits and characters, you know, making eating meat fun. But if you really told a child that this beautiful little cow at the petting zoo or at the farm or at the fair is what you're having for lunch, they would be horrified. They don't even make the connection. But we really owe it to them. We owe it to them to teach them what's right. And who doesn't agree with what goes around comes around? Is there any religious tradition that doesn't believe in that? Is there any religious tradition that doesn't believe thou shalt not kill? It's in every tradition of the world, whether it's Eastern or Western.
Well, it's really interesting that when that statement is made in the Bible, that somehow people only translate it to mean people, killing other people. They don't carry it to the next thought that maybe it means not killing anything.
Mm-hmm. You know, in India, they have, well, the Buddhists have a concept of nonviolence, ahimsa. And also, the tradition goes back, you would say, even before time, before recollected time, that those who were very knowledgeable and wise and realized and really connected to their divinity, to the spirit that dwells within every one of us, they would not even kill an ant. Not even an ant. I mean, I have seen people who are so gentle, they'll see cockroaches. And they know that the same quality of soul is in every single body, and they'll scoop it up and they'll put it outside. They don't even want to step on an insect. So it's a completely different consciousness. And imagine if we could begin to cultivate that consciousness of nonviolence. We were talking before that so many great thinkers, Tolstoy, George Bernard Shaw, if we have time, he wrote quite an extraordinary poem having to do with eating of meat and his meditation on that.
Let's save that for the end. That sounds like something that would be good.
Yeah, something that winds things up.
Yeah. Well, you really didn't get into the various ways that the animal, I mean, I know this is the glorious aspect of the meat, but even the chickens, they burn their beaks off as they're going through the slaughterhouses so that they don't peck each other because they're kept contained in such small areas. And, you know, the argument...
Well, not only that, but because they pile the cages all on top of each other and they don't care for them properly and the lights are left on all the time so that their breeding cycles, everything is interrupted to facilitate what they want to get out of them, they're... In particular, chickens are fed massive amounts of antibiotics. And the poor things, their claws grow around the cages. So they suffer in so many terrible ways, these creatures. And what to speak of transporting them, it's not that they're fed properly or that they have an opportunity to drink water. I mean, creatures are tortured in so many different ways.
And those vibrations of anger, people don't stop to realize that the vibrations of anger and torture come into our bodies when we eat these animals.
Yeah, they call them fear toxins because all of us know when we're afraid how that adrenaline pumps through our system. So that's the last thing that this living being sees is that sense of complete betrayal at the end and fear and bewilderment and all of that. And then the meat decays, it becomes green. Quite horrible, and it has to be injected with something so it's nice and red and lovely, but it isn't.
The meat turns green?
That's I mean, this stuff is decaying. They have to put things in it, chemicals in it, you know, so that it looks the way it does when it gets to our shelves. But everything that's killed like that is decaying.
Well, I read in some research that I did that there are 80 different chemicals and antibiotics and hormones that are injected in every piece of meat that comes through the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
80. And, of course, they don't put that on the label.
No. What to speak of, cattle is one of the major, you know, there's so much about global warming now. Cattle is a major source of greenhouse gases. Tens of millions of tons of methane is released into the atmosphere by the over billion some odd cattle. Millions of tons of carbon dioxide to burn the forest to create cow pastures. Rainforests. Now, you've done research on rainforests. How much, a lot of our medicines come from what? Doing the research in the rainforest. And we've researched maybe 10% of what's available in the rainforest for the medicines that we're using to save our lives, and we're destroying those rainforests.
That's right. They're being cut down to create cow pastures for McDonald's and Burger King and all
that.
So
what's more important, that we create cow pastures, that we eliminate forests that are ancient and that contain secrets of life and longevity and well-being? What to speak of the indigenous people who live there with all of the knowledge they have about so many of these plants.
Exactly.
and what they could give us. But of course, as we know, people like to make patents. They don't want us to just be healthy from the wonderful, rich earth that has been given to us. And we are, you know, we're stewards. We're not meant as the humans on this planet, because we have higher intelligence. We're not meant to just slaughter and harm higher intelligence. We're meant to be stewards. We're meant to care and serve.
Well, I want you to touch on the, you mentioned about the number of people these days that are becoming allergic to milk, and that, and you're contending that these allergies are coming from the pasteurization, the, when they get, they homogenize the milk. I mean, when and if, I mean, there are some places where you can still get whole milk that hasn't been pasteurized. Do you know for a fact that people who are taking the milk that comes straight from the cow, that they do not build up this mucus in their body?
You know, I'm not a doctor, and so that's probably an area that it would be better not to discuss the details. It may be that there are people out there who have access to farms where, I know we have one here, where the animals are not being slaughtered, and it's, there's so much government control. There was a time where I knew of some farm communities that had a that were vegetarian based. Farm communities, as far as intentional living communities, where people would come together to live off the land, and they actually had relationships with local farmers, and they used to get wonderful fresh milk. And I have friends who raised their children and who grew up for, you know, 10 or 15 years in these communities, and then there were all kinds of regulations, and it was very difficult to do it over time. And their kids were incredibly healthy and beautiful, beautiful skin, bright eyes, strong. You know, they made so many wonderful products out of milk in that community. People, they would share them at the local fairs. People really just loved it. So, but as far as somebody who actually has those allergies now, I'm not going to go tell them, you know, go find a farmer who'll give you some fresh cow milk and check it out. I think people need to do their research personally and see what's going to work for them.
Well, of course, one of the major arguments over the vegetarian diet is the fact that people do not get enough protein,
mm-hmm.
that our bodies need the protein from meat, and that it's leaner and it builds stronger bodies, and I'd love for you to address that topic.
Well, there's protein in broccoli, there's protein in kale, there's protein in grains, there's protein in beans. You know, so where does the variety really come from? The fruit, the beans, the vegetables. There's only a few meats that are actually cultivated that most people eat. So there's wonderful combinations of proteins. Look at this. Look at the cultures in Africa or in South America or in India. What do? They eat beans and rice. Why? Because it's a complete protein. Whether they eat beans and corn, or you know, like in the South American countries, or beans and rice as they do in the Asian countries, it's a complete protein, and it's very accessible. You're not getting extra cholesterol, extra fat, extra pesticides, antibiotics, which is a burden to the system, the liver, the kidneys. You're getting protein that the body can actually assimilate very easily, and the body is able to extract all the amino acids that it needs from plant proteins.
But what are some of the other, I know you've had your own health challenges over the years, and you, how long have you been a vegetarian?
30 years.
Oh, really? I didn't realize it was that long. What are, you mentioned, we were having a conversation the other day, and I was making the comment that because I was a blood type, the blood type, that I still found that I was craving meat occasionally, not all the time, but just
mm-hmm.
occasionally. And you named some very interesting dishes that I think would be very helpful for people to know about.
Well, there's, I guess everybody has their own needs. And if somebody is eating a vegetarian diet and has not taken the time to learn about protein combinations, and initially when I was a vegetarian, I was a junk food vegetarian. I'll admit it. I don't know how many people out there hearing this, but it's true. I was 18 and I didn't know anything, and I really like sweets. So if somebody is eating a lot of fast food, they're eating some burritos and then they're eating pasta and then they're grabbing an apple and then they're drinking a soft drink and then they're wondering why they don't feel well and they're blaming it on the fact that they went vegetarian and they're not getting enough protein. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It just means that they haven't taken the time to do it right. Now, part of the problem is that people think, oh, my life is so fast and it's working. Whatever I'm doing, I'm at least able to function. I don't seem to be falling apart, so I don't really have to worry about this. But the statistics are really here and people are, you know, dropping dead. So all of a sudden, because things are happening in the body that we can't see. If a person can tolerate milk products, then that's easy because you have, say, yogurt. You can put yogurt in tahini. You can make a wonderful sauce for vegetables with yogurt, tahini. There's a nice spice. I don't happen to use garlic, but there's a wonderful spice called asafoetida. It's sold in Germany in the pharmacies as a digestive, but it's actually a resin from a tree, and it's used extensively in Indian cooking. And it has
that's
a little...
That's a substitute for garlic, is it not?
Well, if you like the flavor of garlic, this is a more refined flavor, and anything that you would have added garlic to, you can add this to, and it's wonderful in stir-fry. And it has the addition that it helps to digest beans. So in India, they always use hing or asafoetida.
Would you spell that for our listeners?
Well, let's see. It's got an interesting spelling. A-S-O, F as in Frank. I think then it's like, it might be A-E-T-I-D-A.
Oh,
but
really?
If you go to an Indian store and you just ask for hing, which is H-I-N-G, because you will have to get it in an Indian store. Indian grocery store, if you ask for hing, then they'll be able to give it to you. And you have to use just a little bit so you get used to using it because it's quite strong.
Okay, I want to give the number, the call-in number, too, if there's any of our listeners that have any questions. And that number is 877-876-5227. Well, now, the yogurt and tahini, then, like, for instance, if you're making, how would you use the yogurt and tahini? What would you use
well,
that on?
Well, say you made a stir-fry with some broccoli. And, like, say you really crave meat. Well, you could make a stir-fry with tofu and some broccoli, some carrots, any combination that you like. And then you'd have this yogurt tahini sauce, and I guarantee you that you would feel completely satisfied. And people have to experiment a bit when they start eating beans, because obviously beans have a distinctive quality that everybody knows about. So... people have to see how their digestion is, and sometimes you can make the beans not so heavy, make them lighter in a soup. Split mung, which you can also get in an Indian store, is small and yellowish. It makes a very creamy soup, and it's very high in protein, very easy to digest. Even people who are a little debilitated can digest that one quite easily. The soy is harder to digest. So it depends on the age of somebody and their health as far as maybe what they would put into their diets. The other thing is, if you're going to eat seeds, like, say, sunflower seeds or walnuts, they are much more accessible and easy to digest if you soak them overnight. Mm. And you can soak sunflower seeds and sprout them. And then you have so many incredible enzymes that are available because it's like a new little plant. And you can add those to things or whip them up and make a creamy dressing with them.
Really?
There's a lot of information.
Let me ask you, do you grind the sunflower after they've sprouted? Then you grind them up and make a liquid dressing out of it?
Well, if you wanted to, I throw them in a salad because I happen to like the flavor.
I see.
Sometimes I use dehydrate, so sometimes I might dehydrate them. Because at a very low setting to preserve the enzymes. That's another thing people can do, is to grow sprouts. And that goes into a whole other arena of live foods, because that's a whole other aspect that people could be considering, where they could be getting incredible amounts of nutrition. Sprouts are just, they're little powerhouses, and they could just give so many wonderful vitamins and minerals and enzymes to the body for its functioning.
Well, and that's one thing that people, I guess after the age of 40 or 45, we all begin to lose our digestive enzymes.
Yeah.
They weaken in our stomach, and I don't know anybody that's, you know, 50 or 60 years old that doesn't have problems with gas.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually one of the other reasons I think that a lot of people don't want to eat beans, because they're afraid they'll have digestive problems. So how does one counteract that? You say the asafoetida or the hing helps with that.
Yeah, it does. In India, there's a whole science. If people want to look, I don't actually use a computer. I only just got one from a friend of mine who's moving overseas, so I don't know my way around the computer to give you all kinds of websites, but I know they do exist. Like one for becoming a vegetarian is a friend of mine has worked for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals for many years, and she said there's a website called www.choice.usa.net, and that has a lot of information. Concerns, apparently, when you change diets. And as far as addressing your question directly about beans, you know, that's going to be on an individual level. I don't really have too much more. I know that hotter spices like cumin, mustard seed, traditionally when soups are made, these bean soups, there are a few spices that are used. Ginger is very helpful for digestion, fresh ginger. That's an excellent one. And you can even chew a bit of fresh ginger after you eat. I find that very helpful.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's a very good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You had some other foods that we discussed the other day that were really good for protein craving.
Well, there is a bean called urd, U-R-D, that you can get at the Indian store. And salt, pepper, and fennel is the best way to spice that. It's so high in protein that there was one teacher at his ashram, and he said, if anybody's not eating this dal, then he knows that they're sneaking fish on the side.
Really? I just bought some of that, by the way.
Did you?
It's called urdu, isn't it?
Urd dal, U-R-D. Well, actually, is it, maybe it has,
you know, I have it sitting
somewhere
on my counter in the kitchen. It's a beige-colored dal, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's shaped
very small.
Yeah, it's shaped very small. Yeah.
And they use it for so many different varieties of preparations. You know, you can mix it with rice and ferment it overnight and make a wonderful little steamed cake called idlis. And they sell these idli makers at the Indian store. It's two layers of half moon compartments that you put the batter in, and that it bakes like it steams in a pot like a little cake. It's very high in protein, and they make a wonderful sauce for it of coconut and cilantro. Cilantro is used a lot in Indian cooking, and cilantro is great for getting mercury, heavy metals. It's really good.
When you say they mix the urd dal with the rice, is it just like in a, you know, like you put it in a mixing bowl and just mix
it
together?
Yeah, and you'd have to soak the rice and you'd soak the urd dal and then you blend it up and you'd make a batter and you leave it overnight at a certain temperature. I think it's about 95 degrees. There are cookbooks that teach you how to make these. There's a very good cookbook called Lord Krishna's Cuisine by Yamuna Devi. I'm not sure. Like I said, I don't use the internet. So, you know, one thing we didn't mention, and this is really important. If we examine the bodies of animals who eat meat, they have claws. They don't have skin pores. They perspire through their tongue. They have very sharp front teeth for tearing. They don't have flat molars for grinding.
Uh-huh.
Their intestinal tract is only 3 times their body length, so decaying meat can pass out quickly, and they have very strong hydrochloric acid, which is why we are always having to use meat tenderizers and do so many things to our meat. It isn't natural to us. We don't have a problem picking up a carrot, but we have a heck of it. We couldn't eat raw meat. You know, we have to do all kinds of things to it to try for the body to digest it.
That's a very good point.
And herbivores, the other animals that eat plants, they have bodies exactly like ours. Perspire through their skin, no claws, no sharp front teeth, rear molars, intestinal tract 10 to 12 times our body length. Ooh, so now we wonder, why are we getting so much colon cancer? Right? Mm. What is happening? Meat is decaying in our bodies, and it's creating toxins and all kinds of problems. Stomach acid, 20 times less strong than meat eaters. So we're eating things that really aren't natural. Just like a car, you can put in leaded gas into a brand new car for a little while, you know, but after a while it's not going to work because it's really, that's not what's meant for the car. So we follow the guidelines for our cars, but our body is a vehicle, and there's a divine spirit inside. You would think that we would follow the Creator's guidelines. I mean, in Genesis it said you can have the herbs, and you can have the seeds, and you can have the nuts, and that can be your food. Voila, there you have a vegetarian-based diet. It includes everything.
Well, it's always been fascinating to me that some of the largest animals, too, in the animal kingdom, like elephants, are vegetarians.
And gorillas.
And gorillas. And who else?
And oxes. I think hippopotamuses.
I think giraffes are, too, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's interesting is carnivores never eat other carnivores. They always eat other animals that eat plants. So why are we eating so far down in the food chain? We really need, our lives have gotten so fast that even when we get good information, it's almost like we don't have time to process it. We're being pushed so quickly by all the machinery and the technology, but we need to stop. We need to stop and think. If we're harming our planet, if we're harming sentient living beings, if we're wanting peace, if billions of people are suffering from hunger, if we have global warming, and so much can be linked back to this cruelty of animal slaughter, why are we doing it? And why are our leaders, who should be protecting us as a father protects his people, why are they promoting it? And if it's the case now that our leaders are not, that don't have that mood of a father protecting their people, then we as a people need to start taking responsibility for ourselves and for our planet.
It's so true, and it's so logical. But see, that information just simply doesn't get out to people hard enough. It doesn't, you know, the few people who do write about the health aspects and the ecological aspects of being vegetarian just doesn't reach a wide enough audience.
Well, there's a lot of young people in university now, and they're becoming more and more conscious.
What kind of people did you say?
A lot of university students.
Oh, I see.
And there's a lot of people out there who've changed their diets. I mean, my mom is 83, and she hardly eats any meat now, but she was vociferous in her, defending of meat eating and attacking the fact that I became a vegetarian so many years ago.
Is that right?
But not anymore. And we're finding that many people are turning to a vegetarian diet. They're turning to yoga. They're turning to alternative medicine. I mean, there's always going to be a segment of the population that sort of digs their heels in and says, you know, I'm not going to change, and I believe in apple pie mom, the American flag, and hamburgers. That's always going to be there, but we are seeing people becoming more and more enlightened, especially with the internet available, because with a click of a button, you can get so much support. So much support.
Well, I want to get back to some more of your wonderful recipes, because there's so many of us. I mean, I've been a vegetarian on and off, actually, for about 20 years. But you seem to have, well, being very close to the Vedic culture and studying, you know, some of the Ayurvedic methods of cooking, and, of course, the Indian culture is probably the most well-known culture that really stayed close to the vegetarian diet.
Well, they also have, because as you mentioned, the science of Ayurveda, there's so much information about what spices do. Turmeric is used extensively. It's a wonderful blood purifier. Just like the hing, it's fantastic with digestion. One of the things that happens when people switch to a vegetarian diet is they think, oh, how boring. You mean I have to boil some broccoli to death? No. First of all, you don't want to boil it to death. You want to steam fry. You don't want to boil anything. And second of all, the secret in the Indian cooking is you take a little bit of oil, whatever you choose to use, whether clarified butter, which also helps with digestion, and that's something that's used in the beginning before making these soups. You take a little clarified butter, and it acts like igniting the fire of digestion.
Well, I want you to talk a little bit about how butter gets clarified, too, because I think a lot of people don't understand that.
Well, you clarify butter by basically boiling it till all the impurities are out, and then what's left looks like liquid gold. You can see from the top to the bottom. And what's the sediment that's at the bottom, you discard, and then this ghee is just really wonderful.
It's called ghee after it's clarified.
Mm-hmm. And it's very helpful.
Why is it more healthy for you than whole butter? Well, obviously you've burned out some of the
some of these points that you're asking get into areas where I can't be completely sure of facts enough to actually say something over the air to so many people. I know for myself, because I do have weak digestion, I find that adding a little ghee is very, very helpful to the bean soup, and you will add some of the spices. And it makes, when you cook the spices ahead of time, they become very fragrant, and the whole preparation becomes aromatic. So say you're starting with a little broccoli, and you're doing a stir fry with some broccoli and tofu. Tofu by itself is hard on the kidneys if you eat it raw, so that's not something that you want to eat raw. And if you just steam it, it's completely tasteless, and so nobody's going to want to eat it. But if you use a little turmeric, a little paprika, for people who use garlic, you can use garlic, and you stir fry those cubes of that, and some salt, you'll find it very tasty. So say you're doing a broccoli with some tofu and some sliced carrots, because I think vegetables should look pretty, so I always like to add some nice color. So then in the beginning, if you use sunflower oil or if you use a little ghee, then you would put your spices in, a little turmeric, maybe a few cumin seeds. Those are also helpful if you have something heavy like tofu.
What does cumin seeds do?
Cumin seeds, because they're heating, they also help with digestion.
I see.
And in Ayurveda, they have some spices are cooling, some spices are heating. And you can get books on this. You could probably get information online as well if you actually had an interest in exploring some different tastes. But this way, you'll be eating something that's beautiful to look at and very tasty. And, of course, there is in the Vaishnav tradition, they go one step beyond just eating vegetarian food, and they acknowledge that everything comes from God, and so they don't actually, they're cooks, and I know some of them who cook quantities for hundreds of people at a time, and their cooking is a meditation, and they don't even taste anything while they're cooking it. They're so expert, and they offer everything.
You have to explain what the Vaishnav tradition is.
The Vaishnav tradition is that part of the Vedic tradition that that acknowledges one God rather than there are many gods, or that there's one God, that all of us come from that one God, and we're meant to serve that God, and that everything in this world, if it's offered to God, and if we learn how to be servants instead of trying to be masters and controlling everything, that we could actually create a paradise. And that's what the Bhagavad Gita describes, these teachings, and how one can create in one's life peace, and globally. So all the information is there if we have an interest to look.
Do we have time
to read this poem before we
finish?
I'm not sure how much time we have.
I want you to mention real quickly, if you have a couple of cookbooks besides the Lord Krishna's Cuisine, I know myself, Mamuna's Table, isn't that one?
Because that one is so encyclopedic in nature.
Uh-huh.
She came out with several others. She's
mostly Indian cooking, though, isn't she?
She is, and she adapted some Western cooking techniques and also some low-fat cooking techniques from her major cookbook. So you can look under Yamuna Devi and just see what is available.
And that's spelled J-A-M-U-N-A, right?
Y-A.
Oh, it's Y-A.
Yuna. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And Korma, K-U-R-M as in mother A, he has cookbooks. He has little boxes with recipes that are wonderful, that are from all over the world. He's a very famous international vegetarian cook from Australia. And he even had a syndicated cooking show that I've even seen some of the videos of it in the library here.
Well, if someone wanted to go into, like just go into the internet, I know you're not necessarily a teacher of vegetarian cooking, but I've known you for so long, and I know that you have a lot of knowledge. You're just suggesting that the listeners might just go into the internet and look up vegetarian cooking or Ayurvedic, A-Y-U-R-V-E-D-I-C,
mm-hmm.
right, cooking?
The thing is, so many people listening, if they even have an interest in the subject, are going to have very different needs. They'll
uh-huh.
be of different ages, different ranges of health, and also they're going to have more or less time on their hands to either make complicated recipes or simple recipes. So what's going to happen is there's so much out there that once a person starts exploring, they'll probably be attracted by titles like Quick Vegetarian Dishes, or maybe somebody's from South America and they would really like South American dishes, or they just happen to like that kind of food, or they happen to like Italian food. Maybe somebody doesn't like Indian food and they wouldn't be interested in those spices. They want something a little bit more American. So that's why it's better if somebody does their own research, goes to the library.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of books on vegetarianism in the library, on nutrition, vegetarianism. You'd be amazed.
Okay. Well, I understand that you have a lovely poem that was written by...
George Bernard Shaw.
Yes.
Who wrote Pygmalion, that the movie My Fair Lady came from, in the Broadway play, if anybody's old enough to remember that one.
Well, and there's a lot of famous writers and actors and actresses that are vegetarians, are they not?
Yeah, and you know what? I had this great list. I was looking for it everywhere for a show.
Well, I know so. Leo Tolstoy, and I believe Aldous Huxley was a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, why don't we end the show with this wonderful poem? Because I think it's very enlightening, and I think people would like to know that the man that wrote My Fair Lady had such deep thoughts about vegetarianism.
Okay. We are living graves of murdered beasts, slaughtered to satisfy our appetites. We never pause to wonder at our feasts, if animals like men could possibly have rights. We pray on Sundays that we may have light to guide our footsteps on the paths we tread. We are sick of war. We do not want to fight. And yet we gorge ourselves upon the dead. Like carrion crows, we live and feed on meat, regardless of the suffering and pain we cause by doing so. In this way, we treat defenseless animals for sport or gain. How can we hope in this world to attain the peace we say we are so anxious for? We pray for it to God, or hecatombs of slain, while outraging the moral law. Thus cruelty begets its offspring, war.
Wow. Well, you know, what's his name? Who's the, gosh, I can't think of the Deepak Chopra.
Mm-hmm.
He is very much in favor of a vegetarian diet. And he says that until we stop eating flesh, we will always create war, which is exactly what you just read.
Mm-hmm. What goes around comes around. We need to stop and think what we're doing. We need to stop being on automatic pilot. Because what we associate with, we become like. So if we're going to associate with machines, so we become like machines, so we turn off our thinking faculties and just do everything automatically, then how can we take in this information and change our lives? Somehow we have to find a way to take a breath, get off the treadmill, and really think about things and the connections in this world.
Well, you know, it would help if our educational system was more concerned with the well-being of all of us, because obviously they only follow the you know, the advertising media, whatever the most popular thing that the government is putting out, you know, whatever diet.
Well, to speak of all the out of, you know, overweight kids, I have a friend who's working on getting choices, vegetarian choices, in cafeterias across the country.
Oh, really?
And she's facing a lot, but she's really working on it because she wants children. We should want our children to be healthy. Doesn't any culture want their children to thrive, to be strong, and yet our children are developing so many diseases. They have so many problems with attention, with hyperactivity. They're being given drugs. But why are they being given drugs? Why not give them a healthy lifestyle?
That is so true. It's really kind of sad that our society in general is so far removed from the pure lifestyle that perhaps people enjoyed, you know, thousands of years ago before so much.
Even 100 years ago. I mean,
yeah, well, that's
you know, people who lived on farms and
that's right.
They were healthy and
they ate what came
from the farms.
That's right. They didn't use harmful pesticides on their foods. They and, you know, our my parents' generation, I mean, my father and mother lived into their 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm seeing that even my two sisters who came up on a much more toxic diet, they died in their 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And they say people are living longer, but they're not living longer in good health by any
means.
See,
that's really important. There was a government statistic that came out, and I wish I could have gotten my hands on it. It comes through the World Health Organization, and we're 28. We're way down with third world countries on quality of life and longevity. We're way down on the list. In a list
of
30, we're down in like 27, 26, and we're way down there. And yet we have this multi-billion-dollar healthcare industry. So I'm just really encouraging all the good people who are out there and who take the time to listen to your program and to educate themselves about alternative ways of living and being that aren't part of what the media is offering, because what's out there that most people are hearing isn't beneficial because we see the results of it. So we need to become thoughtful. We all need to become thoughtful.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's, in addition to all of the chemicals that are put in the meat, you know, we also have the addition of the chemicals put in, you know, the MSG and
mm-hmm.
and all the pesticide residues, and that's why it's important to even try to get an organically grown diet.
We didn't even go there. There's so many places we could go. What a huge topic. Hmm?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, the fact also that, you know, like there's so many health food stores now all over the country, the Whole Foods and the Wild Oats, and I read a statistic some time ago that health food stores do 20 times the volume of regular grocery store now, which certainly tells you that there's a lot more people going out to find healthy foods.
They're responding to the need of the public, so people are educating themselves. They're taking the responsibility for their health and well-being and for their children into their hands. And there are people who are more conscious about the planet and who are making choices to help care for this wonderful planet Earth. So, yes, I hope some of our listeners out there get added to that enlightened core of people so that maybe we can reach that small percentage that will turn things around before it's too late. We'll say a little prayer for that.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Harinama Mink, I'm so glad that you had time to be with us on our show this
evening. Thank you so much for asking me. I appreciate it.
And I just want to wish all of my listeners the blessings of natural health.
Mm.
And this has been Lexi Ross for BBS Radio and Health Frontiers.